Music Festival. 9 bands will play genres and rhythms all originating from Africa, including Afro jazz, calypso, samba, salsa, reggae, and others. The event will feature the bands Jujuba, Love Nasuesa, Super Mokako, Roots Revolution, and others. The festival will be held on November 1st, 2nd, and 3rd at the TAQ Center, 631 Northeast Grand Avenue, Portland, from 7 p.m. until 2:30 a.m. Come dance for 3 nights straight at the Afro-Caribbean All Music Festival, November 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. More information can be found on the right-hand side of the KABU.FM website under Community Events.
KABU Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Cascadia Psychedelic Revival Halloween Meltdown. Thursday, October 31st, 8 till 2:30 a.m., 5 bands with psychedelic 60s and 70s influences will play the Meltdown at the Bob White Theater in Portland. The bands featured are The Real, Cody and the Wheel, The Kingpins, Coca-Bola, and Mugspoon. They will be performing with the Vintage Oil Slides Psychedelic Light Show by Liquid Lights, Steve Goldsmith, and the Psychedelic Express. That's the Cascadia Psychedelic Revival Halloween Meltdown, October 31st, at the Bob White Theater at 6423 Southeast Foster Road in Portland. More information can be found at the KBOO.fm.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde Vocational Rehabilitation Program, providing assistance to eligible tribal members with disabilities on regaining, retaining, and securing employment particular to their strengths, capabilities, and experience. Information at grandronde.org or 1-800-242-8196. This KABU program has also been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Merrillhurst University, dedicated to helping working adults revitalize their careers by offering 5 part-time MBAs, including an MBA in healthcare management, with evening, weekend, and online options. Listeners can learn more at the information session on Thursday, November 7th at 6:30 p.m. Details at merrillhurst.edu.
She's a big teaser. She let me have the way there now. It was a day for every driver, yeah. So long, find out, I found out.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, hi, this is Grace Eagle Reed, and I'm your host for Disability Awareness. And today's subject is going to be the Right to Dream 2 situation. Our guest is going to be Amanda Fritz. We're going to be doing a call-in here pretty soon. But I wanted to just talk about, I think this is such a complicated issue, and there are so many sides. And so I thought that it would be good for the listeners to hear Commissioner Fritz's recent update. Meanwhile, we have the Pearl District. Here's an article that came out in fact, Street Roots. It's the Pearl District for many represents a neighborhood on the rise, a shining example how to plan urban growth, public transportation, sustainability, parks, and the environment. The list goes on. Add a bustling food and art scene, a growing tech community, and a neighborhood that prides itself on walking and cycling, the light begins to shine even brighter. Talking about the Pearl District and the recent situation of the resistance to have the Right to Dream 2 camp over there. So we'd like to get Amanda Fritz on the line, if possible, and let's talk about that. While we're waiting on Amanda, there's actually a for immediate release. This is the City of Portland is hosting a career expo for job seekers with disabilities. This came from Anna Kanowit, director of the Human Bureau of Human Resources, for the City of Portland, Bureau of Human Resources. And the City of Portland is partnering with Incident, I'm sorry, I'm not reading this correctly, but I think it's misspelled, but an Oregon Vocational Rehabilitation Services to host a career expo for job seekers with disabilities. The event is called Meet Business, and it will be held Tuesday, October the 29th, that's tomorrow, from 9 in the morning to 2 p.m. on the second floor of the Portland building, that's 1120 Southwest 5th Avenue. 20 bureaus from the City of Portland will be exhibiting, in addition to networking, there'll be 10-minute interviews and so on. So if you are interested in that, please go to that event. And so, welcome, Amanda.
Hi, good morning. That's going to be a wonderful event. I encourage folks to come.
Thank you. Well, thank you for being on the show. I really appreciate you. We called you, I guess, didn't we? But So Right to Dream 2, Amanda, what's going on? What's the recent situation?
Well, we're still in a little bit of a holding pattern. The Pearl District Group had offered to provide some compensation to the property owners at 4th and Burnside and also to Right to Dream 2 in order to make it worth their while to stay there for 60 days while the Pearl Group looks for other suitable properties that could be acceptable to Right to Dream 2. So that's where we're currently at.
Well, what happened that I've dropped in on some of the audience participation. There was a lot of people there, and there's a lot of busyness around this. What's wrong with going to the what was the resistance to going to the property that was already, other than, I know there's a lot of media on this, but I want to get more of an in-depth situation because you're in the middle of it. Why can't they just move over there?
Well, they could, but the mayor wanted to give the Pearl District folks an opportunity to provide some resources and look for an alternative site. So I agreed to that, and that's where we're at right now.
Yeah, and what about the, there's so much impact on, the emotional given or the sort of the given on that is, oh no, you can't be here in the Pearl District. You know, there's a lot of that on the street. What is your, where are they going from here? And what is their attitude? We were supposed to have Ibrahim here, but he could not come today, apparently. So I was hoping for that voice, too, but I know you own a lot of that. What, other than just they are going somewhere, what is the timeline here? What are we looking at realistically, and what's the resistance? I mean, I know you're commissioner, and you probably can't. There's some things maybe you can't say, but say everything you can. This is KABU.
I have a lot of leeway.
This is KABU.
Because I am the commissioner.
Let's go for it.
So I get to say whatever I think.
You know me. I'm Grace. Let's go for it.
I know, really. So I think that Right to Dream 2 and I are both somewhat frustrated with this delay. We had worked really hard to find the new spot, and I think it's a good location. The fact is there are people living outside in every single neighborhood in the city. And what Right to Dream 2 does is provide a safe place where people are not bothered and where they're not bothering anybody else. Mm-hmm. So why there's so much resistance to them moving to a sheltered spot underneath the Lovejoy ramp of the Broadway Bridge is not entirely clear to me.
And to all of us out here, it's like, hey, come on, are you serious?
Yeah, well, I mean, the part of it is, can't we do better? And so we being Right to Dream 2 and me, are willing to look at, is there a better location? Right. And we don't want to spurn the offer of additional resources, both for Right to Dream 2 and to provide some compensation for the current property owner, who has been extremely generous in allowing them to stay there and is continuing to allow them to stay on their current site despite the lease having expired. So we're reasonable people, and we're looking for solutions. We're also getting a little impatient, and so we would like to sign a use agreement for Lot 7, which is required by the settlement agreement, to happen very, very soon, so that if we can't find a better alternative, then that move is still on the table.
Well, I think what most people that I talk to, other than people like me who get it, they homeless in a camp and no permits. And I know that where they are living, where they are seated now, isn't that private property?
Yeah. So, and that was what the lawsuit was about. The current property owner in Right to Dream said, we don't need permits. The city says no, even on private property, their zoning code and other appropriate codes are regulations that the Bureau of Development Services is required to enforce. So on the current property, they could be legal if they applied for the appropriate permits. And they've chosen not to do that at this point, and that's what the lawsuit was about. The settlement agreement says we agree to disagree on that issue and to propose to move them to another site where, again, my position is that they just need to apply for the appropriate permits and it's a legal use there.
And I know that's been expensive for them, i.e. the lawsuit, and I think that's infuriating to think that somebody on a private property can't be compassionate.
Well, no, see, actually that's not the case. Both the property owner is being very compassionate to them. They're not charging rent to Right to Dream 2. And the attorney for both the property owner and Right to Dream 2, Mark Kramer, is donating his services. They're not paying him for doing the job that he's doing, and he's doing an excellent job on their behalf. So I think that it's really clear that there are a lot of good-hearted people who are trying to find solutions that work for Right to Dream 2. And the other piece that I think is important for your listeners to hear is that Right to Dream 2 is a specific model. It's an organization that has rules, that has a board, that has structure. Illegal behavior is not tolerated there.
Exactly.
They really work together. It's drug-free, alcohol-free, weapons-free. Mm-hmm. They try to help people get into services, to get into housing, to get jobs. And indeed, several of the people who are there do have jobs. So that's one of the reasons why it's important that another site be found where it's easy for people to get to their jobs in downtown Portland.
Well, exactly. It's been a leg up for many people.
Yes, it's been a hand up, not a handout, and
exactly.
Has cost nothing other than a lot of sweat equity and a lot of good-heartedness and people donating their time and their food and various other services. So it's actually, I think, a Portland model, and that's one of the reasons that I'm awarding them a Spirit of Portland award. It's exactly what we would hope people to do, mm-hmm. is work together to find solutions and take ownership of addressing their own challenges.
And I know the Portland Police Bureau spokesman Pete Simpson said recently that the Central Precinct officers report that Right to Dream 2 has not been a problem for police as it seems self-managed, and that's a quote from Officer Simpson.
Yeah,
and I think a lot
zero
of people
calls for service.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. A lot of people don't understand that. So,
well, you know, just like there are a lot of different kinds of folks who live inside, there's a lot of different folks who live outside, and everybody mm-hmm. who's outside has a different story for how they came to be homeless, houseless, mm-hmm. and what they would like to do to get out of that situation. So it's unfortunate when people lump together the homeless. There's no such thing as the homeless anymore than there's the mentally ill or the elderly. There's people within categories that get labeled, but there's a bunch of different reasons and a bunch of different behaviors from people both inside and outside.
Well, as a 70-year-old elder, I get the lumping of the elders. I'm supposed to be, let's see, I don't know, doing all sorts of things that I don't do. Yeah, so I get that, especially when I'm in my scooter. I think a lot of from my observation, being, you know, out there on the street and being part of it and being a supporter of Right to Dream 2 and homeless. I've been working with the homeless population, especially with addiction issues, for a long time, as you know. And I think one of the attitudes that needs to be broken, and I believe this movement is really helping that, is that labeling that you're referring to. What more can be done about that other than what you're already doing? What can the listeners do to help that situation?
Buy Street Roots and read the stories and talk to people. You know, go visit Right to Dream 2. Find out about, you know, the person who's asking for money on your street corner. Talk to them. Find out what they need, why they're there, and what their experience has been in trying to access services. And then one of the good things that's happening right now is that we're starting to recognize that we have more need than we have services. So how are we going to address that ongoing need so that people at the very least are not attacked when they're trying to rest outside?
Yeah, exactly. And I am astounded, frankly, at the attitudes. And it's a fear. And I don't think we're talking about a bunch of bad people that choose to be less than compassionate or even understanding, but they're just afraid of the homeless. It's that typical, I'm afraid of this person because he's not like me or she's not like me, and the dirty and the bed bug. You know, I've heard so many things, and it's like, no, you don't understand. These some of the most brilliant people in the world are on the streets, mm-hmm. you know, from what I've understood.
There's a white, you know, it takes all sorts of folks, inside, outside.
Yeah, it does. Well, we're working at it. So we have a caller that just called in, and they want to know, after World War II, armories were used in Europe to house people who needed housing. Why aren't we using such resources for housing here?
It's even those, if there's a building, it takes money to heat a building, it takes money to have electricity in a building, and it takes having an organized group who's willing to self-govern. So some people have suggested putting people in Wapato jail. If you think about a jail, is built to be a jail. It's built to keep people apart. It's built to have people locked up. Mm-hmm. And some of the people who are now on our streets are people who have been in jail and prison and who did not have appropriate assistance when they had done their time to find the resources. So sending people back to jail is totally not an option. People would rather be outside on the street than to go live inside, and indeed that's the case with some of our shelter situations, that mm-hmm. some of the folks I've talked to at Right to Dream 2 are concerned about bed bugs and about crime and other challenges inside and outside our shelters, and they feel, and I think they've proven, that their current model is more successful for some folks. For others, absolutely, the shelters are lifesavers, and we need to be looking at, are we going to put more resources into shelters? How are we going to provide more affordable housing? I mean, the scary thing is that with the federal shutdown and with sequestration still being in effect, we could get even less money from the federal government to assist with housing, and that means less money for rent assistance. It means less money for all kinds of housing programs that even now are not adequate.
Yeah, I'm caught up in that. Some of my money got cut, and I'm just on the edge, you know, mm-hmm. as a senior. And $11 is a big deal for me. Some of my food money got cut because things are getting. I don't want to say worse, but they're going that way until our economy straightens out. It is, after all a ripple effect, and it's just, I think it's just learning to do the right thing to do. I'm in fact looking at a Street Roots article, and it's like, the Pearl District to welcome these people is just the right thing to do, and yet there's all this busyness that we're talking about.
Well, let's be clear. There are some folks in the Pearl District who have written to me and who have talked to Right to Dream 2 and absolutely are ready to welcome them. So just like there's no such thing as the homeless, there's no such thing as the Pearl District in terms of the number of, and different kinds of folks. And so, and some of the people who've stepped up and said we should welcome our new neighbors have gotten quite a bit of flack from some mm-hmm. of the other mm-hmm. folks who disagree.
What is the main sticking point right now, inside or outside government?
I think the main sticking point is that there isn't a good alternative that's been put on the table. Mm-hmm. And the Pearl District interests, who thought that they could come up with something within 3 weeks, have not proposed anything that's legal and acceptable to Right to Dream 2. So it took me over a month to find the current location after I had gotten assigned BDS, the Bureau of Development Services, in June, mm-hmm. and really intensively started looking at this in July. Mm-hmm. It's not easy to find a site where the zoning is appropriate, mm-hmm. where this it's close to services. Mm-hmm. So that's the challenge, is that we don't have very many good spots.
Yeah, so Ibrahim is on the line. Ibrahim, join us.
Hello, how you doing?
Hi, Eve.
Hey.
Ibrahim, tell us who you are for people who don't know who you are.
If there's somebody out there who don't know.
There are people who don't know. We want people to know who you are and how you're related to Right to Dream 2 and Commissioner Fritz.
I'm Ibrahim Mubarak, chairman of Right to Dream 2 and also one of the co-founders. And when related to Amanda Fritz, we've been in friendship since, I guess, she became commissioner here in Portland. And we've been allies and almost foes, but right now we're allies, and we've been working on a solution,
yes.
to find a common place, a decent place for Right to Dream 2 in a houseless community.
Yes, and in the meantime, and Ibrahim, how long have you been working with this? How long has the camp been there? Or the
rest area has been there. The rest area has been there for 2 years now.
2 years, and yes. Again, I understand the situation, but KBOO listeners, many KBOO listeners probably may not, and then of course this goes out to other listeners, and so it's been there a couple of years. It's on private property. The man who owns the property is absolutely wanting you to be there. Then suddenly there was this push from city government on zoning laws, and then that was a big challenge, and now it's about moving. Where do you see yourself moving, or do you see yourself moving? You see the camp moving.
I would like to go to Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. At least he'll sell people. But however, things are still in negotiation, and we do see ourselves moving sometime in the future, unless someone want to purchase that lot where we're at and allow us to stay there.
Ah, well, this is something the community can consider, certainly. Maybe we need to do some fundraisers, huh?
Yeah, of course.
But isn't it also, Commissioner Fritz, as well, about expansion? Because actually, we've already said this, but this camp is giving a leg up to homeless people. People are getting off drugs. They're getting off. They're getting into education. They're getting into preparing to get into housing. So, because really, Right to Dream 2 is such a phenomenal movement, and it's actually a leg up for people who are wanting to get off the street. Don't we need expansion? Don't we need more support from the community?
Of course we need that, but in doing that, we had to break the Grecian myth and the stereotype that people have a concept about houseless people. And this is something that I noticed in being in a houseless community for 14 years here in Portland, is that it's a new type of houseless people. Anyone at any given time can lose their job or housing, or two different aspects, like not enough affordable housing, not making enough to pay for your present rent, losing your work and your housing due to foreclosures, or due to domestic violence, or just people coming here trying to find work and a new way of life.
Yes.
You know? So what people see on television or for God forbid, here on the radio, that houseless people are negative humans, I think that's wrong.
Yes, and that's why I wanted to do something here on KBOO about it, and I really appreciate you calling in. And so what we have about 4 or 5 minutes left. What are some closing statements on the vision, the activity, the need? Ibrahim, since you're on the phone, would you go first? And I'm assuming Amanda's still on.
Yes, I am.
Okay. Ibrahim, what do you want to say to the public that maybe doesn't understand this, or even the ones that do? What more can we do to help this situation?
It's a lot more we can do, but since we only take 2 minutes or 4 minutes, and what we can do, you can invite the Right to Dream to come give presentations and workshops and talk about the success and the concept of Right to Dream 2. And you can go, you can contact me at 503-839-9992, or you can go down to 4th and Northwest Burnside, downtown Portland, and talk with the people there, or just ask Commissioner Fritz. And it's a lot. We can have dialogue with different communities and different neighborhoods and associations. Okay, I'm going to leave it up to Amanda Fritz.
No, give that phone number again, Ibrahim, so that they could people that want to reach you can.
503-839-9992.
Great. Thank you so much. And thanks for coming on the line. And I'll come down and say hello soon. and Commissioner Fritz, some last-minute thoughts?
Well, thanks, Grace, for having this discussion on the radio and to all the cable listeners who are engaged in it. It's been an absolute honor and privilege to work with Right to Dream 2 and Ibrahim, as he had mentioned, that we've known each other for quite some time, sometimes as friends and sometimes as not. and I have been so impressed with the organization, with their dedication to making decisions as a group, to bringing everybody along, to considering everybody's opinions, and to listen to folks who can be quite hateful at times and work beyond that and want to have these discussions. I mean, if you think they've been to some of the most angry and fearful folks and attempted to set up a dialogue, and that's what we need to do. We cannot stay in our cubbyholes and refuse to talk about these challenging issues. We have to work together to figure them out.
Yeah, and I think that is what the general community can do that really wants to support it, and I know that's where I'm at as an activist on this. And, you know, we have to get beyond Band-Aids and get into nonviolent communication says we are in tragic expression of unmet needs until we're not. So.
And I'm going to hang up because I'm going to meet with some visitors from Canada who want to talk about this very issue.
Oh,
so I think it's also important to recognize this is a national issue. This is not just Portland. It's certainly a metro area issue where folks who lose their job or lose their house because of a medical bill throughout the metro area will come to Portland to get services. So we need to talk about things looking at the big picture as well as the individual people who need that hand up. Thanks so much, Grace.
Oh, thank you, Amanda, for coming on. I appreciate it. So, folks, what we're looking at is a huge issue, but there is also many things that we, the public, can do. Go visit. Call Ibrahim, call Commissioner Fritz. She's very available. There are people working very hard to make this a better situation, a more understood situation. So I want to thank you all for listening. And this is Grace Eagle Reed at KBOO Radio. And please call in if you have any questions, and maybe we could chat about this and probably couldn't have another show on this eventually. Thanks so much for having me and listening to this show. Thanks. Bye.
You are listening to the Radio Zine on KBOO Portland. Stay tuned. Coming up, we'll hear a discussion about deception and lying. Is deception normal in all human interactions? Or is there a cost to lying, even for white lies? What is the truth about lying?
Hello and welcome to the Scholar Circle. I'm Maria Armudian. Some scholars say that deception is ubiquitous and normal in all human interactions, that lying is useful and possibly even biological. Others suggest that there is a cost to lying, even for white lies. What is the truth about lying? We have three experts with us. Sissela Bach is a senior fellow at the Harvard Center for Population and Development Studies, formerly a professor of philosophy at Brandeis University. Among her books are the seminal Lying, Moral Choice in Public and Private Life, Secrets on the Ethics of Concealment and Revelation, and A Strategy for Peace, Human Values and the Threat of War. David Livingston Smith is professor of philosophy at the University of New England. He is the author of several books, including Why We Lie, The Evolutionary Roots of Deception and the Unconscious Mind, Less Than Human, Why We Demean, Enslave, and Exterminate Others, and Hidden Conversations, An Introduction to Communicative Psychoanalysis. Charles Ford also joins us. He is a professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Neurobiology in the School of Medicine at the University of Alabama. His books include Lies, 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 The Psychology of Deceit. Thank you so much for being with us here on the Scholar's Circle. Two of you, you've argued that deception is essentially ubiquitous, possibly even natural, biological. Sissela Bach, you argue that while that may be so, it's rarely justifiable and has a cost. Maybe we should start by distinguishing the kinds of deception and lies and where they occur. Sissela